Oh, God. Well, I think we already started the podcast. You want to just do the late intro?
Yeah, late intro.
No, that's on. That's recorded?
Yeah, we're done. All right, fine.
Start new. Dan Homan, one of the most legendary professional BMX riders, and over the last summer, got to hang out with you a little more, and a human being off the bike. You're a true inspiration on the bike and off the bike, and I'm glad to say that we are friends now, and... Welcome to the Unclick Podcast.
Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
What the fuck are you doing in San Diego? I haven't even asked you.
It's my fault.
You
got him here?
Yeah.
Was this Traction Coffee money?
No. Still got the Traction Coffee. Aiken is a Traction guest. I'm waiting until Aiken can come to San Diego.
Okay.
That's amazing. I'll drop that. But yeah, Van, and we did an interview with Van for his new role at Source. And they hit me up about
Van
it.
I asked Van why he's here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The guest.
Remember, Van. We've done our podcast already this summer.
Ryan was getting there. But I have a new role with Source BMX and doing some things for them. So I think like kind of as part of trying to just kind of promote what I'm doing for them. We kind of talked to Ryan and... You know, just thought it'd be a good idea to get out here. And while we're out here, we're going to be doing a little bit of work for them as well, doing some bike checks with some guys that are here. And I'm sure we'll dive into the details of exactly what I'm up to with them. But that's the general concept.
Yeah. So Source and our BMX work together?
Yeah. Source. It seems like you guys do a lot of stuff together. Like, yeah, honestly, shout out to Source, because even when we first started our BMX, they were one of the ones that kind of came on essentially at the same level that they were sponsoring at Ride when we had like nothing. When we were starting with nothing. So it was like...
fully backed you
from the beginning. Yeah, so they came on and they like... You know, because in the beginning it was like, how long can we make this work? You know, and they helped like fill a huge box and be like, hey, this will work. We back you guys, etc. So we worked together on a bunch of stuff and they were like, hey, can you ask Van some questions? You know, do a little interview thing. And I was like, fly him in for the podcast, you know, but it didn't work out at that time. But then we just kind of continued the conversation. And then Tom had the pretty good idea, honestly. Like, I didn't think of it, that fly man out here, he does a podcast, I'll go around with him for a couple of days, we'll do some bike checks, it's a win-win for everybody.
Multi-purpose. So I guess we'll dive right into that part. Yeah. I mean, that's what my role, I mean, generally, I'm just helping them produce product content. So the idea is just to kind of help people understand the products better and, you know, in a fun way and also like in an informative way. So, you know, I always use like forks as an example. Like you have all these offsets for different forks and like, you know, the average person is like, what does that mean? So they kind of explain like how do I want to ride or how do I ride? And then help you understand like what's right for you, a 32 millimeter offset, 25, 15, you know, and just kind of provide that information. And that's just one example. But, you know, even like James Cox, who does a lot of the edits for Source and things, he used to ride for S&M. He's been riding his whole life. You know, if you're not paying close attention, he's like offsets for forks. This wasn't happening when I was riding. So like, which, you know, after I explained it for the Source piece, he was like, oh, I know which one I would buy now. Yeah. You know, so that's kind of the idea, a kid just getting into it or, just helping people understand. So that's the general goal. So we're filming a lot of product videos and I'm doing a lot of like written reviews that are kind of like a side blurb on the website. So when you're shopping, there's just extra things to click and look at and just help the buyer know what part is best for them.
That's amazing. That's huge for Source and a perfect job for you. It's like something that nobody would ever be able to have that knowledge unless you've been in BMX for as long as you have.
No, thank you. Yeah, I really enjoy it so far. At first, I was a little bit confused as exactly what we were up to. I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But now that we're kind of getting
you to inform everybody everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that we're getting into the groove of it, we can have a lot of fun with it too. It doesn't have to be dead serious all the time. We, you know, doing a lot of the bike checks, which are really fun. And we try to like let them be a little bit loose, have some humor and we try to keep everything quick and short to the point too. You know,
I think you relating, like talking to pros and up and coming riders with their bike checks, everyone's so comfortable with you. Like I've been watching them come out on Instagram and stuff and they just look fun. Like you're just messing around with Gary and little Suski and they're just like, it's perfect.
Thank you.
Looking good so far.
No, thank you. That means a lot. 'Cause that's, that's the goal, you know. And yeah. like I said, again, we want to keep everything like short and to the point. Like you can read all the specs, like whatever, 4130 chromoly, this metal, this angle, this. But what does that mean?
To
what,
me, even
the
I barely
angle
know.
The bars, the height of the
be,
bars.
I always need to be reminded when I'm like, you know, when I was switching to Odyssey, like, what's all this mean, you know? And then they tell you. Like
what so. Is it? What is a bottom bracket height? How does it affect?
Yeah,
your
right. Exactly. You know, like that kind like of thing that,
it makes a difference.
And I think we even want to get into to.
Yeah. And I hate doing that shit. So yeah. shout out to you.
Yeah, you've had to do a lot of.
I've done some stuff. Yeah, I literally there's a guy that literally hassles me on a weekly basis to do a tire explain video that I've been saying I'm going to do for 6 months. Like literally, Sean Garrison, I think is his name, and I literally know his name.
Like, and it can get challenging sometimes because sometimes I'll be just writing up, and it's like you said, a tire, for example, like everybody's making the same tire now. So like what makes these tires different? So that's what I do my yeah. best to decipher, like how is this tire different than that tire or, you know, yeah. whatever. So just
how did the relationship come about?
So basically, I mean, I finished the work that I was doing in Tokyo mm-hmm. for the Olympics and I came back to the States and wasn't really sure exactly what I was up to next. And I had a really good relationship with the Source guys from actually going to the first Battle of Hastings in like 2016. At the time I just like sold my house and I was just kind of like floating around. And so I ended up staying in Hastings for like a month after the event, just chilling and hanging out. And so I kind of got like close with those guys then. And we've had a good relationship ever since. And then when I got back from Japan, I wasn't really doing anything for a while. I was just kind of chilling, see what came up. So I started just kind of feeling people out that I, you know, thought would be good to work with if there was an opportunity. And it just so happened that I had talked to Tom when at Swamp Fest. I was just put the feeler out there. I was like, hey, I don't know if there's anything, but you know, if there's anything that you think might fit me, I'm trying to figure out what's next. And you know, didn't necessarily expect to hear anything back, but then a few months later he came to me and with this idea
like we made so, you a job.
Yeah, yeah. Basically. Yeah. Yeah, so it was a pretty pretty amazing. Yeah.
That's cool.
And at that point the Olympic thing was ending for you, or was there an opportunity to keep doing, because you a lot of people I'm sure know through Kyle's Vital interviews and things like that, but you were like completely working for the Olympics, right?
Right. So I was living in Tokyo for 3 years originally. Yeah, it was supposed to be
insane. Yeah, that's another whole epic story.
Yeah, originally it was supposed to be 2 years, but the pandemic ended up being 3 because it got postponed. So
you stayed there through the pandemic too?
I was back in the States during the worst of it for like 5 months, but then I went back for, so I was there for like maybe a year and a half or a little more than that, and then came back here for 5 months and then went for like another like 14 months or yeah. whatever. So
what were you doing fully over there? Like what was the exact job?
So my role, my title was the BMX freestyle discipline manager. That doesn't really mean anything to anyone, but
like the whole Olympics though, like
BMX freestyle and discipline do not go together.
So BMX I was
discipline.
Discipline yeah. means more like know, BMX as a discipline. Like
it might sound better in Japanese.
Yeah. Like. But I mean, basically, I was just handling a lot of the logistical aspects of organizing the event for the Olympics. So. We had
That's
a team.
Another crazy job. Did like you just throw that out there, and someone's like, "Oh, we made you another job. You're gonna do this." Like, what? How do you get that job? God. What is that?
Maybe we should rewind to the 2x4 days, and then you know, oh, like literally, it's like it is one
a lot of
those
stuff.
Things.
He's been this pro bike rider who's dropped the heaviest, game changing video parts, but in the middle of all that, he's owned a bike shop. Then BMX freestyle discipline manager in Japan. Now he's working, made his own job at the Source.
You know what it is, and this may be fast forwarding a little bit, but it's like you could. The common thread between all of those things is work ethic.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like to do as many fucking video parts as you've done over the years and just to push through certain things, and it's just work ethic to create a bike shop, to do all this other stuff. Like that's all it is in a sense.
Yeah, you know? I think so. I think you're right.
He's good at everything because like I think me and you have talked about Bam before. We're like, if you're going to give it, like when he sends everyone out the Nora Cup thing, like why'd you vote for this person, blah, blah, blah. Like when you do it, you're going to do it right and proper, where everyone else is like, I'm going to get this done real quick. Boom. Like Bam's going to stand there and do it right. And you're like, all right, everything he does is pretty damn legit. I think that's
a compliment.
Well, thank you.
Sorry for all the compliments.
No, keep them coming. Let's go.
Yeah.
Shower me.
But I just love that, like, you are just this you can be like just criminal mischief, game changing Van Homan, but like knowing you as a person and getting to know you better over the summer, I've got to like learn that about you. And it's really inspirational.
Well, thank you.
No. It's not that the jobs find you. You just have that work ethic and people want to do stuff with you.
Thank you. But no, I was like, it really, the timing was good. Like I think like that opportunity came up because, you know, obviously I'd been writing professionally for a number of years, and that, you know, you could feel that the writing was on the wall, it's kind of winding down, and you're like that like idea of like what's next is kind of haunting you. And
this
I was
going into the Japan
leading into Japan, and you know, I would kind of help my friend out at his wood shop sometimes. I was still making money from writing. I'll get some judging gigs, you know, so I was just kind of piecemealing everything together to still kind of make a living. And and then I'd been judging a lot of events, and I was judging UCI events, and I had consulted with them about some of the formats of how the events would, you know, run, and definitely a lot of the inception of a lot of the judging stuff. We had a lot of judges meetings and conversations about, okay, how's this going to work, and what have you, and like training courses and everything. Just trying to make sure it was legit and as transparent as possible.
Who's in charge of the training course for the judges?
So, I mean, that got brought. I mean, now like Dave Cleworth, who's like that. Everybody, his nickname is Hank. He's like the head judge of a lot of these events. He's kind of taken probably the most lead role as far as that stuff goes. He's very organized. He's a good judge. He knows numbers. He knows like, so he's really good at it. And he's really good at like, teaching people basically how the system works, of course. And he's a BMXer, you know, he was never professional or anything, but he's one of us, you know? And So like I was just involved in all that stuff. We could go down so many rabbit holes.
We'll circle back eventually. Thinking, like,
you're an Olympic judge too, and still are. And you do
All that, actually, I was not an Olympic judge.
Well,
I judged the World Cups and some of the World Championships. I could have been an Olympic judge, but I was working on the. Actually, I was really happy. I was actually really happy that I was doing the job I was doing in Tokyo, because you know, for something like that, you're probably only going to get for the Olympics, you want judges from each country. So me and Kaczynski are the two main USA judges for the like World Cups and the World Championships and stuff, so like the odds of us both doing the Olympics were almost zero, because they wouldn't want two USA judges on the panel. So the fact that I was like working on the Olympics in the way that I was, it was pretty cool, because then me and Brian both got to be there and both be involved, and
you both
be part
got
of
jobs
it.
Instead so, of one getting cut out.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. So one of us would have been sitting at home if I wasn't doing the role I was doing. So that was kind of cool. But anyway, all that stuff led to me getting a call one day. Like I got a call from Kevin at the UCI and Bart DeJong, and they're like, "Hey, like no promises right now, but there's this job. If it was offered to you, would you be willing to move to Japan?" And I was like, "Mind if I sleep on it?" And that I woke, you know, after thinking about it just for a few hours, I was like, I have to do this. This is what I've been waiting for, in a sense, because I feel like I was trying intentionally to like take advantage of any opportunities that I had and just be involved, like whether it's X Games or the Feast events or you know, any brands, like just say yes to everything. And
solid
your
advice,
your connections and your involvement, like you said, if you work hard, you do a good job, that's got to lead to something eventually. And I was like, here it is, this is it, like, you know, because
at that moment all the experience was like, okay, perfect.
Yeah,
like, it led you to that job, and that job was like meant for you.
Yeah, so there was no way I was saying no. And I mean, I was really excited to be involved. I was really excited to like open a new chapter as far as work, and I also really embraced the opportunity to experience another country and another culture is in that way. Like, we've always traveled, but living somewhere for that amount of time is so much different than just taking a week or 2 week trip. So
you learn any Japanese?
Yeah, Nihongo moskashi desu kedo chotto dekiru.
Wow, I can't believe you said that about Dennis.
Oh, you bastard.
Dennis ski desu.
That's amazing. You know that about me, and you know Japanese. Wow.
No, I picked up a good bit. I'm actually really proud of, I think you like, you know, to learn another language, you have to consciously make an effort. I worked with some people that were in a similar position as me, and you know, you could just see that they made no effort at all. And you know, I just was always asking questions. Like my friends, we'd go out to the bars or we'd go riding, and just if I heard a word a lot, I'd be like, what does that mean? Or if I wanted to say something, how do you say that? And I would just put tons of notes in my phone, and then I started using an app and things like that. And
so you can communicate in Japanese
fairly well. Like I'm definitely not fluent by any stretch, but like if I meet somebody, I can talk for about, like, it's pretty predictable, like a new conversation, so I can like talk for like 3 or 4 minutes before I, like, when I realized I was getting decent is when people started just like talking to me as if they thought I could really, really talk. And then I would have to just be like,
you lost me.
Gomenasai nihongo muskashi. And that just means I'm sorry, Japanese is difficult.
Yeah.
Like, so I would, but like they put the brakes on it. But I, like, that's when I was like proud of myself. I was like, oh, I must be getting good if they actually think I can do this for real. Like,
yeah. but yeah. What?
You really embrace the Japanese culture.
I love
for three
it.
3 years.
Love it, man. Like, I mean, I met
people. Did you want to stay at any time? Were you like, I should just, this is an amazing place, I'd like to stay? Or were you ready to come home?
No, I wasn't sad to come home, but I certainly, like, under the right circumstances, I wouldn't be opposed to staying there either. I really did love it, and I made like lifelong friends, and I just really love the culture, and it was almost like reverse culture shock coming back here because I got so comfortable. Like, you know, 3 years isn't a short time, so
became home.
Yeah, it really did become home. And you know, I also enjoyed, strangely, I was sad to leave the job as well, because it was such a major shift from riding your bike professionally for so many years, but I enjoyed the structure of it. Like, I enjoyed, like, actually going to work every day and, like, working 9 to 5 and working on a project. And we had such a rad team that, like, this was shocking to me. Like, they actually let me and leaned on me to build the team that I worked with. So, I mean, it was, you know, other than two people that I inherited whom I also came to love. But, like, most of our team was BMXers. So it was really rad. Like, I don't know if you know Peggy, like Peggy, he's like one of the main street guys over there in Japan. And then Hiroshi Wahara is like a flatlander over there that I met through Chad DeGroote originally.
Have I been
originally.
Saying his name wrong this entire time? And then, Wahara is always, is that wrong?
Yeah, it's like more like Wahara, like the U isn't so sharp. Right. But yeah, and then like Ken Junickel like helped out a lot, who does like JIC distribution over there.
Broke
like
his arm.
They like,
I broke his arm.
You broke Ken's arm?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Felt really bad about that. But, sorry, Ken.
Yeah, and then just now I feel like I've said most of the team. I need to shout out to Takashi and Kotaro as well. Like, yeah, we just had like an amazing team.
Kotaro is a flatlander.
Yeah,
right?
Cool. So, like just people. I just loved working with the people I worked with, and they were passionate about what we were doing, and they wanted to do right by BMX, and they understood BMX, and so it was. It made it really special. I felt really lucky that. To me that tripped me out. Like, I, you know, obviously I hired in and we started working on the project, and then over time, like, okay, there's like kind of like a hierarchy of like different jobs for different tasks, and there's a timeline of when you bring those people in, and they're like, you know, who, asking me like, who do you think you should hire? And you know, if I had no advice, we would go to HR and they would find someone. But you know, I did have people to recommend, and then it just kind of snowballed. Like, it was like, okay, well, let's bring Hiroshi in. He can help me with this. And then, like, next thing you know, it's like a whole team of BMXers, which is the way it should be, you know? So I felt like it worked out really well, you know?
And you kind of you owned your own bike shop, so you kind of already did something similar in a way with employees and creating something, but it wasn't like a structured 9 to 5 necessarily. Because I'm getting at, this was like your first real, like, job where you had bosses and things, and the bike shop was something like that, right? But you were your own boss still?
Yeah, I guess just in the sense, I feel like the bike shop was probably...
It's not your first business venture. You created your own bike shop that was badass with a team and made DVDs and stuff.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, like in that respect, I think a couple things there is like, one, just being organized. You know, being organized and having leadership skills, I think, are two important things for both of those things. So I think the stuff I did at the shop probably helped in that aspect.
Was the difference in the shop though? Were you saying like you liked the structure of it? Did you not, that was the shop because you were the boss and ran everything?
Probably just the clock in, clock out aspect, I assume.
Yeah, I think there's two things. I mean, one, I think there's, see, like when you own your own business, I think it's a blessing and a curse, because you have everything to gain, but you also have everything to lose, you know? So,
okay.
You know, if the business is struggling or whatever. And also at that time, I was still trying to be a professional bike rider as well.
Full on in the 2x4 days.
So my time was really spread. Yeah. I couldn't always focus 110% on the shop. But yeah, so I don't know. It was just kind of nice to work on something I was passionate about. I felt like I was good at it. I was working with people I really enjoyed, and it was like, but at the same time, it was kind of the first time I just had like a steady salary that I could just, like, you know, it wasn't like, oh,
true. Without, you know, being a pro too, because that was a great point you had. Like, that might have been one of the main differences with 2x4 in the Japanese gig, was you're not full pro bike rider anymore, because during 2x4 you're running a shop, but you're also like thinking about, you got like two bangers in mind. You're probably getting over the weekend and then going on a trip wherever, you know?
Yeah.
It's like trying to, you're spreading yourself way more thin than when you're like, all right, I'm just going to focus in on this one job.
It just felt comfortable. Like, I always worried about money. Like, my entire BMX career, I feel like I had moments. I mean, I was always doing okay, but I just feel like it was always more stressful in that sense.
Always,
like,
you know, we talked about that in the Mueller podcast.
You're just piecing it together. Like, you're just piecing it together. So, like, even, I mean, maybe in the early years when I had some really good years, it was like, but it always felt like everything was like had an expiration date, and it, like, you're always like trying to figure, okay, like, and you have to be really self-motivated as like a professional BMX rider. So you're like, okay, what should I do next? What trips next? What video parts next? Like, and you're always thinking about it. And again, like, even sponsorships, everything feel like there's an expiration date. So I don't know. It was just a different level of comfort. I just liked that I could just go to work every day and and just go to work. And then when I was done work, I'd do what I wanted to do.
It was just way more simple.
Go to work.
It was. That's your paycheck instead of like, what am I doing this wrong?
As somebody that kind of like, my job and my life has been kind of like on both sides of it, you know, where I've had the office job where you have to go into a ride all the time. And I've had a job beforehand, but it was, I've always joked that, like, hey, I'm just going to fucking spin out, lose my, this is literally a joke during the ride days, 10 years ago, I'm going to fucking lose my shit and I'm just going to go work at Jiffy Lube. And I'm going to, like, and I'll get the job, I'll be off the fucking clock, I'll be covered in oil, and then I'll go have fun. You know, and it'll be work, and it won't be this blended mix of, like, all-consuming life that becomes work. And it is the same now for me, where it's like, it's 8 p.m. You know, like, I'm working.
For a lot of, like, pro bike riders or people like you, that creatives, like, that job is actually, like, probably way easier and way more relaxed. But you don't get that creative,
you
know,
reward. Yeah, you lose your shit in a different way. So I just, like, lose a different part of my shit.
But that job's perfect because you got to have this structure and comfort, but it was, like, sounds really creative.
Yeah, I guess that's a good question. Was it rewarding in the end? Like, besides the team building thing?
100%.
Like, can you work at Jiffy Lube?
I think that's the important thing. That's what I wanted to say. I think that's the important thing. It was still something I was extremely passionate about. I was working towards building the first BMX freestyle event in the Olympics. So
give me an example of something that was going in a wrong direction until you came in and changed it.
Just really, really basic things sometimes where it's important. I mean, just something as simple as the position of the judge tower.
Okay.
You know, like, okay, where does this need to be? And, you know, they're going to tuck them up somewhere where they can't see anything, and just, you know, waiting for the course design. There's a lot of things they were trying to do before they had the course design. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, well, you can't really do these things. This isn't a basketball court. This isn't a soccer field. This isn't always the same. The course is going to be different. So that means all the elements around the course need to be adjusted accordingly.
And the people at the Olympics have no clue. They would put the judging tower here, and then the vert wall might go up right in front of it.
Yeah. Or they can't see.
Totally honest, that was one of the biggest problems. And I mean, this would have got fixed one way or another. Someone would have figured this out, whether they knew BMX or not. But you know, they were trying to design the grandstands and things like that before they had the course design. So then the course design came, and the course was like 4 meters tall, and the grandstands were like 3 meters tall. So, like, people were saying, so obviously that got fixed, but like, you know, these are just,
but yeah, they don't know that something can be 4 meters tall. It's when you're, it seems like so obvious to us, you know, and you have to be that guy that goes, hey, slow down, you know, like that's interesting in a sense, like how not difficult but difficult it is.
Yeah.
And explaining why.
Well, and even, you know, just another thing, you're asking about stuff that, like, when I first arrived that I was changing, you know, like the staging area, they had kind of like back behind the stands as if these people were going to be like released. Yeah. Like from nowhere,
coming out of the wrestling arena, like, yeah, yeah, with the snake on him and stuff, Durs with a snake on him and shit, like,
you know, and I had to explain something as simple. Song. And I had to explain something as simple as, like, oh, no, this needs to be like right up near the course. The other riders are going to watch, they're going to hang out, yeah, everybody's going to watch each other ride, cheer each other on, and just even just explaining that camaraderie. I think, like, something that in our world, in that Olympic world, that a lot of people have commented on, and I think that we understand and appreciate about BMX is that camaraderie, that everybody's kind of, you know, even if you're competitors, you want to win, all those guys are there to get Olympic medals, but like there's still a level of support in BMX that I don't think you see in a lot of other sports, especially Olympic sports. So
true.
I think it's pretty cool.
They probably notice a lot of that riders like genuinely clapping when someone did a cool run, when they're like,
yeah,
oh, no, not many other sports do that.
Yeah, so
at least not action sports.
For sure.
It's insane how much shit goes into the Olympics. Like, it's just a bunch of countries like fighting for like a medal next to their name in each sport.
Is when you boil down NASCAR. So there's all these people going around with fucking alcohol and cigarettes and dick pills on their car, going around in a left hand circle.
But there's so much money. There's so much money involved. Whereas like these countries just pump a bunch of money in, so it makes them look like the most athletic country.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Like NASCAR, they're making Marlboro cigarettes money every time that car goes around.
It's all nationalism, basically, right?
It's all to make your country look like it's a shit.
Yeah.
Which is
who
has the most funding to pump into like these sports to get a medal next?
Speaking of, is Darden doing anything again with China?
Or no? Mine. I mean, the last I heard, Rob was doing stuff with USA, with like Team USA now.
Oh,
like,
cool.
I think he's helping Ryan with the team, but but I don't really know the details, so I shouldn't speak on someone else's what they're up to.
Okay,
but,
so
but yeah, I think Rob's done with China as far as I understand.
Yeah, that seems like a whole other saga.
That's for a Rob Cog
podcast.
That's probably pretty interesting.
So you came back from the Olympics, everything got done. How weird was it to kind of be at the Olympics but then like nobody else is there?
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously sad that there was no audience. Yeah. That part was
kind of like normal at that point in life, though, you know, like all the events had no people at them. Nothing. You're just building grandstands.
Yeah. So, I mean, that part was sad, but, I mean, to be honest, I think I was so ecstatic that the event went off and the event actually happened and everything went well. And I mean, it was a pretty special feeling after working on a project for 3 years, especially through a pandemic, and then everything comes together and works. I mean, I think that was the most exciting and rewarding part, like all this planning that you've done for years, like when people actually started arriving and like everything's in motion and all the people on your team are whether it's some delivering ice or sharing information or whatever, it's the shuttle showing up on time that you know you've been scheduling, all these things, it's like, wow, it's working, it's happening, it's going on. Like, I know that there was a point where like I didn't have anything to do, like at one point, and I'm like, that's because we did it right.
Yeah.
That's why I have nothing to do right now, it's all working. So it's like, it was that part was really cool.
I have a question that I wrote down.
That's a trip. Yeah, how much goes into like making the machine work in every sport? And you were
And it definitely gives me a new appreciation for like any event I've ever been to. You know, like it makes me way less likely to complain about certain things that might arise like during an event, you know, or maybe more likely because, you know, depending on which way it goes, I guess I could be like,
you might know how easy some things are for you to manage and you're like, how the fuck is this not working right?
Like, I could appreciate how hard it is, but I could also be like, they need to be doing this. I don't know. So,
why the fuck is there no street, but there's flatland in the new Olympics, upcoming Olympics?
I don't know. I don't know. Exactly.
No offense to flatland.
But actually, flatland is not in the Olympics.
No.
So, okay. But
scratch.
But
I'm gonna take another sip of the beer. Every time I say something stupid, I have to drink.
Even if it was, though, I could probably vouch for that. Is street contests aren't represented good at all for BMX. They're always on some recycled little skate course, where flatland contests are usually like amazing. They're like the best
show. I thought flatland was in. Crowd.
No. So as far as I
know, somebody told me that
flatland's not in for France, from what I understand. So I think it was pitched. I think they wanted to get it in. Flatland is under the UCI umbrella. Like, they have like a UCI World Championships and World Cups and things. So if there's going to be another BMX event in the Olympics, it's going to be Flatland. Like, I don't even think.
Oh, shows how much I know. No Flatland in the 2024?
Yeah.
Those Flatland contests are amazing. Like,
they are amazing.
They're amazing. It's amazing. Like, they.
But it just seems
the energy that they have. Like,
you could argue so beautiful. That, like, next to Vert. That Flatland is like the least.
I don't know though, dude. Flatland
versus street.
Well, street's huge, but I'm saying my point was like street contest. Street's the shit, but street contest, there isn't any good ones. They're all dog shit.
Yeah.
There's no good street contest. There's great jams and stuff, but as far as street contests go, you watch that and you're like, dude, why the fuck that it doesn't have like?
Yeah,
they're not even riding courses made for BMX at all. They're riding like these shitty little recycled street league courses, and it doesn't make BMX street look. That great.
Well, so I had a very dumb question.
Well, I guess
it's a great question.
No, this is a great question. It's because I guess that leads me to like a few points. Like, first of all, like, this kind of makes your point and your point at the same time. But like, if street was to get in theory, that would help there be better events.
Yeah. You know, they'd make a real course and it'd be like, ooh, this looks sick. Like old X Games.
Just how, like, whether you like the courses or not. You know, like, I think I personally really like the park events that are happening that move towards the Olympics. Like, I love bowl riding. The Vans Pro Cups were amazing. But in my opinion, when it comes to like an Olympic event, I think that's what I think is right
big for the Olympics. Ramps, it's like,
you know, big ramps, big tricks. Resies, those are the guys. Like, you can disagree.
Don't
say those are the guys, but as far as Olympics goes, that does make the most sense for BMX because it's like 1080s, double this, double that. It's like, it's almost that style, you know, whereas like.
I just don't like that the park doesn't exist for somebody. Like, we have Claremont, luckily. But outside of Claremont, what giant wood parks are there within 8 hours of here?
They're worldwide, I guess.
Doesn't exist. So it's like
bowl riding.
Maybe not in Southern California.
It's like making mega ramp in the Olympics. It's like, okay, so it's just this unobtainable thing. I'm taking an extreme.
That's a good point.
An example.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
And it makes it so it's just like unobtainable. Like it doesn't necessarily represent
certain
like
things, but also like. A lot of shit in the Olympics is unattainable.
God, the Modelo just makes me argue.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I see your point, and I think there's a lot of cool directions that you could go with it. A lot of arguments that could be made. I mean, I think that those ramps are in the realm of what exists, and I think that
doesn't mean I don't like it.
That type of show, I think, in my opinion.
Worldwide, for what it's huge.
you're sharing with the general public, like if it's limited, like sure, it'd be great if there was dirt and bowl and park and street and flatland, but that's not realistic. So like from my perspective, I think.
What about Vert, Van? I'm just messing around. You just didn't list Vert. You listed everything else.
I'm gonna say something really controversial right
fast
now.
Let's upset some people.
Like I think, like. Obviously, Vert is insane, and I respect the hell out of like what anybody does on a Vert ramp or any of those guys have done. But from like a creative aspect, like I think it's kind of boring when the ramp is always the same. I think, in my opinion, like whether it's street or park, like BMX, part of it is the terrain and how you adapt to the terrain and how you use it in an original way. Mm-hmm. So I personally don't like the idea of an event that you can practice your run 365 days a year. I like the idea of you having to show up and figure out that park or figure out that street course and like adapt to that. To me, that's a huge part of BMX freestyle. And like, I mean, I'm not saying it's the only part. I'm not saying like, don't get me wrong. I respect the hell out of Vert. But like in that respect, I want to see guys like, a bowl contest or a park contest, you can do those tricks, like put a big quarter on there and you can still do all the tricks you could do on a vert ramp. So, you know, that might, yeah,
I heard somebody said recently that like Vert isn't dead. It's just transferred into like the Fast and Loose dudes. Like, and they are the Vert riders of these days. Like, it's not necessarily like trick based. It's like, it's kind of what you're talking about. It's taking Vert riding to all these different obstacles and all these different parks and riding it in different ways.
Yeah.
But
yeah, Vert riding. That's a huge topic, but it was just huge at a time where there wasn't that many good wood parks, not that many bowls and stuff, and it was a ramp that people could ride.
Yeah.
And now it's like, is that really what I want to get into when you have all these options? Yeah. Like, I can't even bail. I can't hang up. There's like, there's a knockout around every corner. Yeah, like, it's a savage sport.
Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah, it's like, it's insane. It's mental.
What,
watching anyone who got good at Vert, you're like,
whew. Have you had the Olympic conversation with, Trey Jones? Because he's been like, he did a podcast a few years back about just like, fuck the Olympics, but fuck the Olympics. Like, that it was not like this is not
Olympics, but fuck the Olympics.
Yeah, effectively. Like, he didn't say that, but effectively, that's what he said. Okay. It's like, when I want somebody to find BMX, I want them to find Swamp Fest, because Swamp Fest is, to me, is what BMX is. I'm paraphrasing Trey, and then not the Olympics. And I, you know, I think it's blah, blah, blah. Have you had that like type of conversation with anybody? Has there been any like outspoken? Because, you know, I feel like you broach that conversation because your van.
He's the realest
street lord, dude, you know,
BMX,
like,
who is
working for the Olympics
and helping the Olympics do cool stuff. It's like, you're asking him the question. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's fine. That's
like, I mean, of course, there are, you know, there's people that aren't a fan of the Olympics and things like that. From my perspective, it's just one more opportunity that people can take advantage of and can gain from and can share BMX, give an opportunity for BMX to be seen. And I think that all those things can coexist. My personal feeling is that it's not taking away from anything. Is there stuff that frustrates me about some of the bigger events or working at the Olympics? Of course, you know, and that's why I am happy to be there to try to get everything on track as best it can be. But ultimately, I think it just creates more opportunities. And I mean, especially like, I don't know, I don't think it's a coincidence of like how much we've saw like women's freestyle flourish since the Olympics. And I think it's like, I think that is a direct result of that.
Olympics, like, yeah, Vans Pro Cups. Yeah.
I think most people.
Women's BMX.
Yeah, the Vans Pro Cups
Vans,
as well.
Vans Pro Cups and Olympics helped women's BMX just double in the last
the women's event was better years. Than the men's
it was a nail biter like, it was amazing. Awesome. I was glad I had a mask and sunglasses on because I was tearing up like
that's awesome. Gave me goosebumps. I was like, no way, this is happening. Like, everyone knew like Hannah won. All right, boring contest. Hannah didn't win.
Crazy.
And the run that won was epic.
No, it was a
change the game. Charlotte's run.
Yeah, it was intense. Yeah. So yeah, I think all these things can coexist, and I don't think there's any right way to say that like BMX should be this way or that way. And you know, I embrace all of it. And I think you see things too, like you know you have guys that I can't think of a specific example, but there's so many riders out there that were like, oh, I got into BMX because I saw Dave Mira on the X Games. Mm-hmm. And they don't ride anything like Dave Mira or like the X Games, you know. Mm-hmm. Some jibby street rider. But that's how they found it. You know, so
No, that's cool. I feel like I just have all controversial questions. So you judged feasts a lot of feast events, right?
Yeah.
When we did that overclicked podcast, Battle of Hastings that one year. I don't know if you were there that year, COVID year.
Okay.
Ruben sat down for a bit and I was like, oh, you judge the feast events. And he's like, nope, not anymore. Mm. He's like, and then he basically said that he thought he could affect change and make the contest better, and he realized that he couldn't, and he peaced out on it. What was he talking about?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe Ruben had different opinions of the way that he thought the event should be run, and that's fair. I mean, it's definitely fair to say that any change at those events is slow.
Yeah.
And a lot of red tape. You know, that's not unfair to say that it's any change is slow and there's a lot of red tape. But, you know, again, I think that's a trade off for anything that's going to move into that realm. You're going to get those hang ups where it's, you know, when you get that support, whether it's X Games or whether it's a due tour, something gets big, there's going to be red tape. And
his voice went so much lower when he was talking about that. I think it was
I understand it. So Ruben went in there and wanted
Ruben, I think he wanted to get rid of the idea of perfection. Like it needed to be perfect, that there was like some sort of like window at the end to like, it doesn't hurt you, but it can help you type thing. You know, because there's that idea of like the guy does a perfect run and then he does the fucking the useless ass flare at the very end of his run and he puts a foot down. Okay. And then he's like, oh, blew his run at the very end there on the flare. You know, like the flare that was like a foot out of coping. And it's like, I think he was trying to, like,
that's an easy way for judges when it's like, oh, thank God, you can throw him out because he put his foot. But it's like, dude, you put your foot down and within that. Hey, when there's people that good, though, and you do put your foot on that course within the 60 seconds, when this shit is Olympic style riding, it's like, you just fucked yourself over. Like,
I mean, that's the way the level is so high.
Don't do the flare if you're going to slip the pedal.
I mean, I get, I understand that argument, and different events can be judged different ways.
Sure.
But I have to say that I've like embraced that when the level is that high and those guys are that good, like Dennis said, I mean, when they start making mistakes like that, that's going to separate these guys because the other guys aren't going to make those mistakes. I mean, if everybody was making those mistakes, well, yeah, then you're comparing one thing to another. But I mean, with rare exception, it's not like the guy who did the perfect, because I mean, you still can. I mean, there's guys who get into semifinals or they'll have a crash or a mistake and they'll still beat someone who did some mediocre, generic run. So that can still happen. Like the quality over just not messing up, you know?
Yeah. A bunch of sixes all of a sudden, like trick wise.
Yeah, but it's definitely harsh. I mean, a crash is going to be harsh. I mean, you could have, maybe that's what Ruben didn't like. You know, but I personally have kind of embraced it. Like, I like that these guys understand, like, I need 60 seconds, a full pull. It needs to be perfect. And I actually, to be 100% honest, I brought that up in one of the meetings. I think I was on the other end of that argument. I was like, we were kind of discussing that. I was like, hey, like, you know, this is something that makes it easy to separate these guys. It's one thing that, like, we haven't gotten any complaints from the riders about. One of the few things we haven't gotten any complaints about the riders about, they all understand it. They all know I need 60 seconds and I can't mess up.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think they mind that. I think they want it. I could be wrong, but I personally think that the riders want to see a full pool.
Like how hard is it to judge somebody like Peraza versus Logan?
That's where it gets tricky. Yeah. I mean, and that's where, like, even in the judge tower, there can be, you know, when you have like creative original lines versus some of the hammer tricks, I mean, that's where it gets really, really tough sometimes. And that's where the judges might even clash. And I think that's why it's important to have five judges and five different opinions up there.
Yeah. And every contest is so different. Like the Ruben thing compared to what you're saying is like, they're both amazing points, but there's different contests for different things, you know?
Yeah.
Like the judges need to know what this contest is about compared to Vans, like that, the Waffle Cup, where it's like the falls don't matter. It's what you land. It's, you know, there's sick contests for that. And that's why they're a 30-minute jam. You go until you're like, can't move anymore.
And that's amazing.
It's a whole different thing than this run that you've been working on these tricks for 3 months and then you get there and like, they better be perfect. Like,
and then again, that just adds to my point that these things can coexist. Like Vans Waffle Cup can be there and be amazing.
I love
and
what you so said can, earlier, you know, like with the Trey comment, and you know, Swamp Fest is BMX and it's sick as fuck, but there's like 20 things that are BMX, you know, 20 different like niches of BMX that are all BMX and they're all sick. Like,
and you know, and that's like, I appreciate like what you said earlier too, just me being involved, because that's like, I probably am kind of in a rare category where like I love what's happening with those events and I love what's happening with the Olympics and I'm insanely proud of like what we contributed to in Tokyo. At the same time, I'm gonna be at Swamp Fest with my tent in February and I'm gonna be drunk.
Yeah.
I'm having a good time. So you know, it's like, you know, like it can both happen.
Yeah. You're in the streets in Philly with us like 2 weeks ago, just hanging out, like enjoying while we're riding the street, just kicking it with us.
Yeah. But fixing rails for Dennis.
Like, fixing rails in the middle of the night. Yeah, literally. Like,
tell me that story.
That's a good story.
Yeah, it is. So we were there's this There's this. How much can I tell people?
Tell them all.
So there's this spot. There's this thing.
We say there's a spot that was fucked up, and I wasn't going to do it because it's too dangerous. I was fucked up, and we were drinking. And Van's like, it's been my dream to see you do that, man. And I'm like, I can't huck this. It's just the rail. The spot is so broken.
This is a downtown Philly thing.
It's in Philadelphia, not downtown. Outskirts, way outskirts. Okay. Across the bridge, I think. My name would be in Philly. Who knows? Is it the two tires? No.
Okay. It's a different clip than I was.
And then Van's like, you said like, you and Dalecki wanted to fix the spot. And I was like, if you guys fix the spot, I'll do it. Cause that is so epic.
Yeah. And Dalecki's the concrete master. So like, just like, next thing you know, we're in Dalecki's car going, well,
it was even better than that. It was even better than that. No, Dalecki doesn't drink. Me and Van were drinking some whiskeys. That's how it all kind of, we got pumped all over this. And we shook hands. And Colin's like,
is that why your hand is hurt still?
Yeah, it's been months, man. Van broke. Couple months. We shook hands, and Colin's like, I got the dinner. Don't worry about it. Van takes his napkin, spikes it like a football, and goes, let's go. And a couple hours later, they sent me a picture of the spot, all cement, like made little cement volcanoes, like 20 of them.
Because the rail is super wobbly.
Like, now I got there the next day, and I was like, the spot could withstand a nuclear bomb. I was like, this is happening now.
But it wouldn't have happened without the Dalecki too, so shout out to you and Dalecki.
That is a great story.
And Losi actually was in town for some reason, and Losi meets Van and Dalecki, and they're all helping with this spot. And I'm getting pictures like,
holy fuck. Me and Foley were
drinking. I'm like, I'm really doing this tomorrow. These legends are fixing this spot.
Put the drink down. Like, oh shit.
No, I think I drank more. I was like, I might die tomorrow, so fuck it. Let's have another one. I literally said that to Foley, like, let's stay up a little longer.
Okay, ready.
I'm gonna enjoy life while it lasts.
Hell yeah, that's awesome.
Good teaser. The same guy who's running a lot of internals in the Olympics.
At
midnight after a few whiskeys.
You were like the Swamp Fest mascot for a couple of years there too.
You had the best quote about Swamp Fest. How? Yes, that night I think you were like, dude, I love Swamp Fest because you know everyone kind of knows me and I just get free breakfast and shit. Walk around getting
you're blowing my cover. No one's gonna do it this time. They're all gonna look at me. They're gonna look at me dirty.
Feed Van.
No, I would like
I get free food. Everyone's fucking dope.
No, I would walk around.
That was a good total different direction.
Oh, he totally sold me out. I would just like get out of my tent and I wouldn't have any food or anything. So I would just like walk around like to the different camps, and like eventually someone would be like, yo, Van Homan. I'd be like, yo, man, what's up? Like, I'd come over, hang out. Like, you want a beer? Yo, you want some bacon, some potatoes? Like, everybody's cooking breakfast on their plates. Yeah. So I'm like, really, man? Are you sure? Like,
thanks for coming to Mischief. Here's some bacon.
It was like totally my plan.
This is
going
to be even better. Feed Van Homan and he'll kick it with you for a little bit.
I'll just get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Feed me. Free beer, free food, please. I'll hang.
Van Homan will eat your food. Not save us. He'll eat your food.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, man.
Oh, God. All right. Where do we go from there? Can you get me into the Olympics?
I'll see what I can do.
All right.
We'll see. It's tough. We can get creative sometimes.
I just spent like 20 minutes kind of half talking shit about the Olympics, can you get me in?
another Van story over the summer. This a thing that we haven't even talked about. Me and you, my back was hurt and you were just chilling and ended up drinking, just me and you, at a weird it was actually dope, your local bar in State College or wherever.
Oh yeah, we were staying out there for the summer. Yeah, I was like,
you were staying out there. Yeah. I was summer. That's what I wanted to talk about. Like, you were doing Woodward for the summer.
Yeah.
Philly Madison, just living the life out there.
Yeah, so
Van's big summer vacation.
Chasing a fucking penguin around.
It's kind of funny.
He was just kicking it. He's like, there's my house, like right off the side of the road, like right outside of Woodward.
Yeah, we were based at camp. I never thought at 42 that would be my first time like living at Woodward all summer. But what happened was you know, like when I was kind of fishing around for like what was next, I looked at some of the jobs on the Woodward site, and I was like, well, maybe some of these would work, I don't know. Like, and I asked my girlfriend, I was like, hey, if like this, I don't even know, but if this worked out, would you even be willing to consider like moving to, you know, this camp for the summer? You know, and she was like, I don't know. And then she started looking at the website and she was like, well, actually, like, this job is like exactly what I went to school for, what I've been looking to do. Like, so like, yeah, so she applied for the job. Meanwhile, I kind of decided like it wasn't really the right fit for me. And so next thing you know, like, she's working at camp and I'm just, like he said, chilling Billy Madison style, just like
so you didn't get the job.
No, I wasn't working there at all. So I was just like I would just come in and ride every day. And yeah, eventually, like, I think after a month or two of being there, that's when I started doing the source stuff. But yeah, so we were just posted up. That was like our home base for the all summer. And now she works there like year round, but she can work remote for the other 8 months, and oh, only wow. needs to be at camp for those 4 months that's in session. So
she literally got a job at Woodward.
Yeah.
So no, awesome. I for any of the Pennsylvania locals, I said State College, but you're in like Milheim, like a tiny little town.
Yeah,
like tiny. Aaronsburg. And I'm taking like one of the golf carts up. One of the employees was giving me a ride somewhere, and they were talking to me, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we know a BMXer. We actually work for his girlfriend. His name's Van Homan." And that's why I was like, "What?" Yeah, she was the boss. Yeah. That's funny. So you guys are going back next summer too?
Yeah, I don't know if I will be going back, because actually,
yes.
Here we go. Here's a perfect segue.
Dun, 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 dun.
Moving to France in March for a year and a half to work on Olympic stuff again.
What?
So yeah we're back on it again.
That's why I asked.
Oh, because the last one was in Japan. That's why you lived in Japan.
Yeah, exactly.
So same job.
So this
now
is in
France.
Paris. Yeah, so similar job. Not exactly the same.
You but didn't similar. Think that Damn. Was. You didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't think it was going to happen because yeah, long story short, I didn't think it was going to happen because one job I applied for, I didn't get. And then I kind of thought it wasn't happening. And then they hit me up about another role. And long story short, it all worked out.
Same job or something a little different?
Yeah, what's the role?
Practically the same. Yeah.
Wow, man. Congrats.
Yeah. Dude, thank you.
So Paris?
Yeah. So Paris for a year and a half.
Lucky
so
dog. Just Japan kinda, and now Paris, France. Yeah. Those are great places.
Pretty wild. So
yeah, those aren't the worst places in the world to live.
So I'm excited.
Great.
When did you move? When do you move?
March.
Oh, that's coming up quick. So so Swamp Fest, recover from hangover. Free breakfast,
straight croissants. To Paris.
Pretty much, yeah.
Free breakfast in Paris.
So you can do this job and the source thing?
Right? Yeah. So we're going to, like, I talked to the source guys, and I'm going to do the source stuff remote and keep that rolling as well. So
nice. That'll probably help build a little bit of, well, the scene in France is already amazing, but you'll get to kind of do some interviews with French riders.
Yeah.
And,
hopefully,
like,
yeah.
Bros bikes. And
it'll be good. I'm close to
there.
The UK and close to, they have a warehouse in Germany. So I'm close to, you know, so kind of.
Actually closer than you are now.
Yeah. So it should be good.
What's your official title?
I guess technically I think I'm the BMX Freestyle Technical Operations Manager.
Oh, okay. Freestyle.
BMX Freestyle.
Wait, I lost it already. Organizer. BMX Freestyle. Why do they call it Freestyle BMX? Do they call it BMX Freestyle?
Sounds better in France.
What's
French?
I don't know.
BMX Freestyle BMX. What's the difference?
It's not BMX Freestyle Dave Mira. Dave Mira's BMX Freestyle. It's free.
Are we discussing what's our sports called right
now?
Yeah. What is it called?
Freestyle BMX.
Do I not
Why is it called BMX? Bicycle motocross? It's the worst name ever. It's this thing we do. Like, no one ever wanted to change it. Like,
okay. The technical operator? What was it? I'm drinking beer.
Stuff. It's the same stuff. Just the logistical planning.
You're skinny.
Very similar role is what I did previously. So
it's actually the operator. You answer the phone when anyone calls. BMX Freestyle. This is Van Hoven speaking. I have answer for all your questions.
It was actually very bizarre to do some of the interviews for the job because I actually knew what I was talking about. And I just feel like it felt very strange, like, because when I first started in Tokyo, I had no idea what I was doing.
I remember asking you before.
No clue. I remember Peggy would laugh at me because we would go ride street on the weekends and be like, "Oh, how's the new job?" And I'd just be like, "I have no idea what I'm doing." I literally had no idea what I was doing at first. I would just go into work and I would just delete emails. Like, if the email wasn't in English, I would just delete it. And I would just, like, that's all I did for
like Google Translate.
That's all I did for like a month was just delete emails. And, like, I mean, obviously eventually I figured it out, but it was a little slow. So now to, like, really understand the job and the lingo and, like, to do an interview and, like, it sounds really stupid, but just to, like, know what I'm talking about, to have, like, a resume that actually fits the job you're interviewing
have you talked
that one prepared you for this one
exactly
an easy interview and now boom,
that's awesome,
got another dope job.
Did you get paid all through the pandemic too, so you got 5 months of paid while you were there or while you were back home, or no salary, man?
Yeah.
No, okay.
I don't feel like going into that. That was my decision to kind of come back here during that.
Oh, okay.
So they were like, hey, like, there was like right when shit hit the fan, and they were like, they even told us before we left, they're like, hey, like if you leave and you get stuck, like you're,
it's on you.
Yeah. So that's kind of what happened.
Understandable. So you get to put a team together, the whole thing again? Or
yeah, I mean, well, I'm sure like every organizing committee is slightly different, so we'll see like exactly what they have in mind and how much influence I can have on that type of thing. But yeah, I'm sure like as you know, as we start to build the event, we'll probably be bringing some other people in, hopefully. And yeah,
cool. Is it what? I don't have any questions. Trying to find one. You have any questions about the Olympics before we move on?
No.
Okay. Mueller talked about a Schwinn check that was floating around the internet. Or a Schwinn contract that was floating around the internet, and how much money it was, and is in the podcast that you heard most.
I must not have got to that part.
Whose contract was it?
I don't know. I didn't hear that part.
We talked about a Schwinn contract.
I must have left in the last podcast we just did with Mueller.
Yeah, it was. He said $6,000 a month in the Schwinn contract. It was. You were there.
Was I?
Wasn't mine.
All right. How much did you get paid from Schwinn back in the day?
I think I only was making like. Did I even make? I don't think I made more than $2,500 a month. Oh, wow. I actually had a really weird experience. Yeah, Foster.
Yeah, I really don't think I was there.
Would have definitely been at least six. No way. Like some of those guys were making crazy money.
Yeah.
Because my contract was relatively modest because I signed like a 3-year contract, and then like within the first year of that is when I like kind of blew up. And I just went from some like kind of random mediocre dirt jumper to being like some of the videos coming out and like winning Nora Cup and like, you know, kind of changed really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I actually talked to them at one point about renegotiating my contract, and they were like going to give me more money. And they had all, okay, if you sign like a 3-year deal, we'll change this and blah, blah, blah. And somewhere along the lines, it's hard to even remember who and all the details at this stage, but they insinuated that like me getting my raise meant that they would have to drop some guys. And like that Wiz was like one of the guys they were dropping. And I was like, I don't know if this was strategical. Like I still think about it to this day. I'm like first of all, the amount of money that Wiz was probably making was like next to nothing at the time, you know, like, so it probably wasn't really affecting anything. Yeah. And I'm like, was this just like some trick to get me to not, well, I really still don't get it. But at the end of the day, they were like basically saying they were going to fire my boy so that I could get a raise. So I was like, oh no. I told him, I was like, I don't want to resign right now. My contract's done at the end of the year. I'm just going to finish out the year and then see what my options are at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And then in that time period that I was kind of riding it out, things actually started to get like really, really sketchy with Schwinn. Like it was just like, you could tell something was wrong. And, you know, I didn't know that they were about to file bankruptcy and like the whole program was about to be done. But I was just like, I'm over this. Like, they're not even doing anything. People aren't getting back to me. I don't know what's going on. So in the meantime, I'd seen Robbie like in Long Island, I think. And we got talking and like, was like, all right, let's ride for fit. So like, I actually called them and was like, hey, can I get out of my contract? Like now I want to ride for this other company. Like, and they were like, we'll get back to you. And I think like a little bit of time went by, and then finally I got a phone call. Like I think it was like a month or two later, like they called me and were like, hey, Van, you're like the first person we're calling with this information because you're going to be the only one who's not completely bummed to hear it. Like we're like ending the program. You're free to ride for fit.
And
like,
who's on the team at that point?
Like, so who else was like
in that phone
so call? There was like, yeah, there was a lot of guys. So it would have been like on the like race end, which is like actually weirdly
I was on the
Matt Polkamp.
All right.
Matt Polkamp, Brian Foster, is like Wiz, me, but then they had like Joey Garcia, and then on the freestyle end was like Jamie. Yeah, Biz was at the very end there. Yeah, Biz was the very end. And like then on the freestyle, like Jay Miron, Ron Kimmler, what other heavy hitters were like on the
Was Pova the TM that was on one of
the... So Pova was the Pova was
I like just talking about Pova every podcast. Pova,
we still haven't done one with
I know
him.
Pova was a freestyle team, so it was actually weird. There was like two different teams. It was like the freestyle team and then the race team, which the race team included the dirt jumpers as well. So I was actually on the race team. Like, so like me and Wiz and Biz and like Pat Juliff back in the day, we were all technically on the race team because we were brought on as dirt jumpers. Like, and then
makes sense.
And they actually used to get mad. Like Kimmler and those guys used to get really mad because the freestyle team, part of their contract, they had to do shows. So they'd be like at fairs and stuff doing these weird box jump shows. And like we didn't have to do that. So they would get really tight.
Is like, it because there was like dirt contest at races and they just
put it together? I think well, it just got lumped together somehow. It's because different budgets and
you know. It's because racing's on dirt. And dirt's on.
Yeah, so I don't know.
So it makes perfect sense.
But yeah, Pova was the freestyle TM.
I was like, that's so funny. Weird.
And then John Paul was the race TM. And then towards the end, I think actually like Lou Caparelli was the TM who took over for John Paul. But yeah, it was like when I got
who kicked you off though? Who called you?
Was it
Caparelli?
No, it wasn't. It was like the more corporate guys. Yeah, like
the lawyer or something.
Yeah,
the lawyer.
Well, I mean, fell upward obviously. So that's.
I'll take it. I'm not complaining. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm happy to like, it worked out. It worked out good. I mean, you know, cause all that kind of stuff is like temporary anyway, you know? So like any kind of like Schwinn, it was never good. You know, I've been on Fit for 20 years and I'm still get taken care of and still get love even working, you know, moving on from actually, I don't consider myself a professional rider anymore, but yeah, it's rad to still get that support.
When did you draw that line?
I think for me, it was official when I got the job in Tokyo. So I like consider 2018 was my like last year where I considered myself a professional bike rider. And after that, I shifted gears and I'm like, all right, I'm working on this now. And like anything I do as a rider is just for me and is for fun. Like I don't feel I still do stuff because I still like to do stuff, but I don't feel obligated to do anything for anyone as like a, you know. As a sponsored rider, a professional.
Sponsors you because you're Van and they like what you do for fun. Like they're not like, we expect another Holy Fit part out of you or something, which is great relationship.
Right. I mean, I think just like what they do for me still is like it for me, it's a really good feeling because it's just like a, you know, it's like an appreciation, I think, for like the commitment that you've had with the brand for years and like what you're still actively doing in the industry as well.
You're out there
still
doing it.
Like, you know, so I think like
you don't have to always film those parts. Like you being Van, who you are now and showing people the riding you love and that you're so tied into the industry too. It's like, you know, I'm sure they appreciate you just as much as you do them.
Yeah, you already filmed the best video of part of all time. You don't need to film the second best video.
What video part is your favorite of all the video parts you filmed?
Is it Holy Fit?
I asked Van. God damn it.
Is it Holy Fit?
I know the answer to this question.
He's going to say a different answer just to spite me now.
Trailblazing. but that's entirely funny because that was like, but
I've never seen Trailblazing.
No?
I've never seen it. Daryl Now video,
yeah, that's
right?
That's the first project.
It's still insane that Daryl Now made Seek and Destroy. You think of Daryl Now as.
And help film Criminal Mischief too, right?
Yeah.
No, Daryl
didn't have any part in that.
No. I think. Yeah,
he was just Seek and Destroy.
Yeah, just Seek and Destroy. But yeah.
Favorite video part that you filmed?
The whole world
thinks the answer is Criminal Mischief. I'm sure.
No, I guess
so. Groundbreaking.
I would have to say Holy Fit actually, because
I love that part.
Because
you answered his question properly.
He's answered it in another podcast.
And.
So you're proud of knowing that you've heard the answer. Good job, Fudger.
I do my research, Dennis.
No, and I think the reason
I think I've asked him to set a bar before. I knew too.
Oh,
the reason
for the listeners, man.
I mean, both Criminal Mischief and Holy Fit, I'm like extremely proud of. But I think Holy Fit was much more of a conscious effort. Like where Criminal Mischief, like we were just out there doing our thing and just going for it and just. You know, like sending it, and it was like just happening. Like, and this is a really special thing about it. It was happening organically, but at the same time, I didn't even like really grasp what I was doing. You know, like so it didn't like there. Yeah. You didn't necessarily appreciate it as much. Where like, and then all the other projects throughout the years, there was always some type of sacrifice, like, oh, like I'm piecing all these filmers together, or I don't even know who's going to edit this, or, oh, we got to have approved music, so the song sucks. Like, you know, like whatever it was, it felt like there was always some kind of compromise. And then Holy Fit was like, me and Stu were working on this, and it's like, I kind of knew that was like, I wasn't done, but this is going to be my last part in this, like, to this capacity.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm giving this 110% and it's going to be like the best part I can create. And like, Stu was just as committed to the project as I was. So it was like, to have somebody that you're feeding off of throughout the whole process that's filming you, and like, you know, you trust filming you, you trust editing the video. Like, that was like, that was special. So then to kind of do all that with someone that I was been friends with since I was 16 and, you know, create that video and create that part, and then to like win a Nora Cup from it, it was just like a really special moment, especially like, you know, to after like, you know, winning some Nora Cups in the early 2000s and then, you know, like a 10-11 year gap where I never expected to be on that stage again, like the torch had been passed. Yeah. You know, and then to be like back up there and like have that appreciation from my peers, and you know, it was like, so I think like just everything involved. And I mean, even in the middle of that process, I compound fractured my leg, like
that,
you
whip,
know,
was it the whip, right?
Just a, it was a whip down like a five stair.
Oh, it
was
really?
Like, you've never seen the clip, okay. I don't think. But yeah, I mean, so like, you know, we filmed for a year and a half or however long, and then I had almost a year before I could ride at full capacity again, and then filmed the second half of the part. So I mean, I don't know if it's 3 or 4 year process, something like that, but like,
crazy,
you know.
It was, how old were you when you filmed that part, Holy Fit?
In my 30s, because I guess I was 34 when the Nora Cup, so yeah, I guess I would have filmed it from like 31 to 34 onward. 30 yeah.
And then was X Games Real BMX the only video part you filmed after that, full length?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only, like, that was Real BMX. After that, I knew I was 100% done with that type of riding. Like, I mean, I've filmed stuff since then. Like, I loved the edit that I did with my boys, Peggy and Dice K,
with
Moto Bunka edit. But I mean, that's more about the spots. It's like chill riding. So I still want to do stuff. I still want to produce content. But yeah, the Real BMX part, I was like, I beat myself up filming that, and I was just like, never again. Like,
yeah,
this crazy, crazy send it shit is like it's, I'm putting it behind me. Like, this is like, that was like very clear to me. Like, where when Holy Fit, it was like, that was my last part, like full part like that. But like, I still got stuff in me. Like, you know, I still got some send it stuff. And after Real BMX, I was just like, that's a wrap. I'm going to die if I keep doing this.
Feel like
done. It's over. It's over.
The fun factor was done. Like, for sending it, you're like,
yeah,
not worth it. Because at a point, I think you've stated this to me before, but there's like a point where you have to accept that you're not like, you're sending it, and your skills with riding aren't going upwards anymore, and you have to like, you know, they're plateauing, or just be stoked on the tricks that you do because you don't have the time, and you're not putting that riding amount of time on the pedals in anymore.
And for sure. No, and that, I mean, that, I think that's a really smart thing to consider too, is like, if you're gonna try to send it in that way, then you really need to take care of yourself. And I can't claim that I was taking care of myself in that way. Like, you know, like, you know, you need to eat healthy, you need to
cross
exercise, stretch, you know, whatever you do, like, you need to do that kind of stuff if you're gonna safely maintain that level of riding. And I wasn't. I was just like, oh, I can still do this, put me in, coach.
Yeah,
you know, like,
for not doing any, like, you didn't do any maintenance and you were getting Nora Cups at 34. Like, that's badass.
Yeah,
that's, you know,
amazing. I mean, that it is a Cinderella story in a sense. Like, even to the point where I, you know, when we talked to Garrett, gave you the award, Garrett Burns, gave you the award, and when we talked to Garrett about doing it, got him the ticket, you ended up winning, and I was like, are they gonna fucking, as soon as Garrett walks out on stage, like, because it wasn't planned, I was like, as soon as Garrett walks out on stage, they're gonna be like, band won, you know? And I'm like, fuck, like like, in that sense. But it was like, it made the moment even better. You know, like, it was like kind of a full circle type thing, and it was cool. It was, because as you said, like, it's hard to win an Nora Cup, But you can win them a couple years in a row. But if you, and then you step away for a year and then you win it again.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often.
It does not happen very often.
A couple times.
I think it makes it more special than like, you know, the first and that one would be the winner. You know, you probably have a few, a bent one and stuff like that. But, you know, it was really cool.
Thank you.
To experience.
Definitely a special moment for me. And like you said, getting it from Garrett Burns is like the... Yeah, couldn't have been. That was a good day.
It was a good day.
What was the video part where you did the yellow tire ride to pull over pegs, like super high hop?
Was that Stay Fit?
I think that was Stay Fit. Yeah, I love that part.
Thank you. That's actually one of my favorite clips.
I feel like that part was like
the up rail and then pull, and it pulls to...
It's a flat yellow rail, and it's like it's pretty skinny, and it's a tire ride, and then he has this massive pop to over pegs. I just feel like... To me, that part was almost like, I can't say the prime of your riding, but like you can even see it in that clip, like the pop and the balance, like everything, like that was like you at like most fit, like Van Homan.
Thank
like
you.
The most,
no pun intended.
No pun intended, but like the form that you're riding.
No, that makes sense.
That level was
the confidence. Yeah, I think you're right. I think there is some truth to that. I think that, yeah, that was actually kind of, what was that, like 2008, I think? Or where was that, 2010?
I don't know. Was that? You're probably like in your late 20s,
yeah,
maybe?
Late 20s, but I think you're right. I think I was riding a lot then. That was like the 2x4 era, and like even if I'd be at the shop, I would go ride like every day for an hour, and just like going through, like, I don't want to say reps, but like there was just certain things at my local spots that I would like make myself do every day. And like, you know, there was like, I was riding a lot of street contests then too. So I like was a lot of things that maybe I would have done once, like and filmed it and then maybe not done it again. I would like do it a lot because I would go to contest and
have to be dialed with it.
Oh, I got a tail whip over a rail today. Yeah. Okay. Like where I might have just filmed a tail whip over the rail, but like, oh, I got that. I've done that in my life and that's I'm done. But then next thing I know, I'm like, I can casually tail whip over rails because I'm doing it all the time. And you know, so I think you're right. I think I was in good shape. I think I was confident at that time. But no, thank you. That song kills me in that part.
You hate that song?
I can't stand it.
Which are you pulling it up?
I'm trying.
I want to hear it again because I can't even remember the song like specifically.
The song literally says, "I'm so bored," and when I hear that song, that's how I feel.
I'm so bored.
And I never noticed the song. I just love your riding in it, and just like,
oh, thank you.
Could tell it was all just like this kind of, it's just hard shit, but you're doing it. Everything looks easy. You just like, yeah. Who edited this?
I think Rich Hirsch edited this. Yeah. This was one of those things where, like, I mean, I think Rich did a great job considering he was just thrown a bunch of footage and had to have approved music and everything. But this is one of the things where I said, like, I feel like there's compromises, you know? Like, if I'd have been
working... I like this song. I never listened to the lyrics. It's just cool.
Yeah.
Rich has such good style, too, though. He's such a, like, an aesthetic person that, you know, like, locked in aesthetics. That he could be one of the few people that could pull that off.
Mm. There's your tale of, like, nothing, like you're saying, just... You got contest tricks that you just do unlock in the
street. Look at that squad you had at that rail right there.
Over Derek Duster.
I love that clip. This one. This is the one.
This is maybe my favorite.
That's
van
the clip,
part,
right?
Honestly. Yeah, that's a clip.
Yeah.
No one does bar over pegs. Yeah, I'm going to say this is my favorite van part.
Thank you. No, I just always like, I always liked the footage in this, but I just never liked the song. I think that always killed it for me. But I guess that's all subjective, you know? Like you said, you liked it.
I never listened to the lyrics. I just
like
the sound of
it. Well, it's not just lyrics. I'm the opposite of you. I don't like the sound of it. Not that I don't like the song, but I don't like the song. I don't feel like the song complements the riding.
Okay.
Like, you know.
The whole video, this whole video was like Richard's vibe, and he had like, you,
yeah,
like you said, like he had everything, like he, all these songs kind of went together in a way.
Yeah. Well, and that wasn't the hate on, like
was
I said,
Stay
I think
that's the name of this video.
Yeah.
That was a good video.
And I didn't want to say that to like say anything bad about Rich.
No,
like I said, Rich was just thrown footage. Yeah. He had to edit this video so fast.
I drove by
and,
this
like,
spot
and
in Australia,
it had to,
I think. I
was, all be approved
was
music.
Canberra?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember driving being so like, funny. That's the van spot. But like, how the hell is this in Canberra? I had no clue.
Yeah,
my favorite part, my favorite van part. They're all great, but that one to me stands out.
Thank you.
Okay, I have more blasphemy questions. This one's actually blasphemous. I actually wrote that down. Kona Gap. You slipped a foot.
Yeah, I did. What are you going to do about
why
it?
Why didn't you do it again?
Actually, I think Losey told me not to. I'm blaming on Losey.
Did your foot touch the ground?
Oh, yeah. It
fucking drags. He's a fucking full all over shin, the place. Full shin drag.
I didn't know.
Nobody ever talks about it. Yeah. I was like, I feel like they would have talked about it in the video.
Didn't
like,
you land in grass, too?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Didn't you land in grass?
Yeah.
So who the fuck cares?
It was before the grass rule, though. That was kind of before.
Always been a rule.
Fuck
though.
Grass rule.
Yeah.
Everybody, if you land in grass, it's like your feet can slip too. Who cares?
There's no rules.
It doesn't count anyways.
I mean, why even fucking leave the house at that point?
No, I don't know. I just.
I don't care what you do. Land in grass, blow the
I
feet.
I don't know. I guess I just took it. Like, I remember doing it and, like, briefly, like, I think I do remember saying to Losey, like, oh, man, should I do that again? Like, he's like, no, it's like, it's good. Don't worry. Like, that's like, so yeah.
Number four.
Of all the road fools.
Number four, foot slips. God, it is
amazing.
Fucked. Dude, I rewatched this entire section because I was like, I didn't want to take this video as like, this was the entire segment. It's been years since I've seen this. And dude, the overall riding was incredible
in this video.
Just in this session.
Oh yeah,
alone.
Yeah, Wessel up on the roof.
Yeah, and,
yeah, just dude. Heavy. All this,
dude.
Oh, that's so. You didn't need to do it again. Yeah, Losey was right.
Yeah, I'm good with
it. It's a road fools. It's a session. Like, yeah, dude, that was sick.
No regrets for me.
Has anybody else jumped it?
Is Kona still like the same?
I'm sure.
I know. Like a dude on a motorcycle recently jumped it.
That's why I think Trey posted that and I was like ABD. Yeah. But I know I had this is I'm gonna like pump up my own ego here.
Dude, do it. You fucking deserve it.
I remember there was like a CFB like right after this, and I remember like Alistair Witten trying to do that gap and like crashed on it like once or twice, and then like so I don't know if he like just got loose or underestimated or what, but like afterwards he's like came up to me and like gave me props because I like he basically bailed on it, like just trying to jump it.
Oh, really?
So like he was like gave me a shout. He like was like, dude, you're fucking crazy. So I was like,
hell yeah.
So yeah, I'm just pumping myself up here.
No, that was sick. Has anybody else done anything over it?
Not that I know of. Yeah. But I mean, sometimes I don't know things.
Is that park still there and that sick?
Yeah.
Like with all this wood stuff? Not the wood stuff. I don't think the wood stuff.
No wood stuff?
Yeah.
No,
Trey's holding a jam there in like a week or two.
Yeah.
Dude, I've always wanted to go there.
Yeah, I've never been
there. I wanted to go to that, but I'm...
Trey's having a jam at the BMX.
Yeah.
Sick. Like, yeah, this is like Claremont. There's like a Claremont wood section, and then there's a whole snake run.
Shout out to Joe Tizio. Rest in peace.
Yeah, fucking two.
Winkleman in this,
two
too.
Two guys we lost in this. It's a shame.
Damn. Just in this session. Look at that spine meeting. I think it was like 7 feet tall. That stuff's all still there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the concrete stuff is still
there. Dude.
That one was perfect, though.
Can I take that one?
You were on it.
No feet came off. You're good.
You're like, I landed right here.
Doesn't matter that I cased it.
That was it. You did it. Whoa.
Feeting.
It didn't matter back then.
No, yeah, it's fine. I just always thought it was funny. I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Watch, is that shit still there? Look.
No, that building's not there.
Look how fucking wild that
is. Fuck.
That's funny.
Yeah.
We just gotta like. I think we need to focus. We're just like watching road fools now.
That happens. Okay, so, dude, we don't.
Now we don't just
watching road fools.
We don't care.
Live our lives.
We're literally.
This is my dream.
This podcast is going downhill.
Yeah.
Nah, we don't fucking care.
He's just leading us up to this. The session.
No, we already saw it. What else I got on my list here? What other controversial questions? Let's talk about the Slim Jim commercial.
What do you want to know about it?
All right.
Made a lot of money off that commercial.
Yeah.
Did you? How much money did you make?
Let's get the story first. Is that the one? So you did this ice pick. I didn't get it from your props interview, so we could actually just pull that up. Props. You said props interview.
Yeah,
it was in my props interview. Fucking big ass ice pick on a rail.
Yeah.
And it was so long that you're probably thinking like, oh my God, I'm going to fucking loop out and just fucking sack the fuck out of this, aren't I?
I was thinking that.
Yeah, probably.
No, I wasn't thinking that. That's what happened. That's not what I was thinking.
Dude, it was such a long ice pick. I feel like you're just like, no, please, like the entire time. Like it's one of those ones.
While he was on it?
Yeah, while he was on it. Yeah, not before you jumped on it.
Yeah, I don't really remember, but I do remember that so I tried to ice pick the rail. I think me and Losey were shooting for a poster for Ride, and I tried to ice pick it. I loop out, just basically jump down like a 20 stair, straight to like a kink like this, just like end up looping out and just full anal to the rail and to the kink. Like, and I remember just laying in the field like in pain and thinking that I was going to crap my pants. Like, but I didn't care. It hurt that bad that I was just, I released all like inhibitions and was ready to just like crap my pants in the middle of this field, but it didn't happen. I guess it just felt like I had to do that. So then it's like Losey and Glenn Milligan, like in this field, and I'm like panicking, 'cause like, I can't feel anything and it's like super painful. I don't know what's going on.
There was blood too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was just a painful, scary scene. So I like pull my pants down and I'm just standing there fully bent over in the middle of this like soccer field, the bottom of this rail. And like Losey and Glenn are like 20 feet away. And I'm just like, yo, am I all right? Do I need to go to the hospital? And they're just like, I don't know, man. Yeah, let's just go to the hospital.
Like, I'm not gonna look at that.
I've heard Glenn. Tell this story, and he makes it sound like he's a lot closer. And he's like, oh, you're fucked. Like,
yeah, I don't know. The details are fuzzy. So I mean, clearly, I was worried about other things.
You go to the hospital.
Yeah, I go to the hospital. I mean, I had the, you know, they checked me out with the rubber glove and all that fun stuff, and then. I didn't actually end up needing any stitches, but I tore my asshole and I was sitting on a donut for a couple weeks.
Oh man, that makes my stomach hurt.
So then that, I mean, so that happens. And then how many months later does the props interview come out?
I have no idea.
Maybe 6 months or something.
I have no idea how long the props interviews came out, but, the props interview came out at some point, but it was actually years later. It was like 2 or 3 years later that someone from Slim Jim somehow saw that clip in a props and they like reached out to props to buy the clip for a Slim Jim commercial, and they like edited.
So this, but didn't they pass it? They didn't take the money. I think they put it to Glenn, right? They passed them on to Glenn because it was Glenn's footage.
No, it was actually really cool what Marco did. So okay. Marco, but basically they reached out to props because it was props footage. And then Marco basically shared the wealth. He's like, well, Van took it to the butt.
Yeah.
Glenn filmed the clip. So we all got a piece of it.
Okay.
Like, so I don't know how it was exactly distributed, but I ended up making like, I think it was close to 20 grand off that commercial. Like I got like kind of like residuals from it. So like at first I got a couple big checks, and then at one point I had moved, and I guess for some reason they couldn't forward the checks to the new address, but I didn't know that. I just thought they stopped. You know, I thought they were, all right, I made like 14 grand off that commercial. Cool. I'm psyched. Good. I didn't know they were still coming. And then like one day this like random envelope just shows up, like a FedEx envelope, and it's got like 20 checks in it. And they were just like they were smaller than the first few big ones.
They were still coming to your last address.
But they added up to like 6 grand. Like there was like 20 checks that added up to like another 6 grand.
Was it worth it?
I mean,
that's so wouldn't 20 grand to take a day of misery and a donut sitting?
I mean, it was a happy ending. I don't know that I would do it again. I don't know that I would do it again.
Like, that's fucking, I'll sack a rail for 20 grand.
So
it'd be hard to get yourself to do it, but if you knew that was...
I mean, if I knew the outcome was going to be exactly as it was, sure, I would do it again, but I would never do that on purpose because that could have been so much worse. Like, I always think about if I would have just...
That clip, I've seen that clip somehow... That was way before my generation, but that is the worst sack I've ever seen, ever.
I just think I'm so lucky that it was the back. and not the like front, if I would have got
you hit your tailbone though, because that's what makes you want to poop yourself.
I mean, it hurt like hell, but like imagine if that was the front stuff. Oh yeah, I didn't want that. That would have could have been
a little replacement surgery.
That could have been a bad scene.
So they hit you up and yeah. Like, all right, we want to use this footage for a Slim Jim commercial. What are you thinking the commercial is going to be?
Oh, I don't care.
You don't give a fuck. Yeah, I don't
care. So when too bad, it's like all right. So but when it, television, they can't
when it
shit anyway.
But when it comes out. I mean, this is all I could find.
Yeah, they dressed some guy up in the same outfit I was wearing.
You've seen this commercial,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and they put a helmet on him.
Dennis, have you seen this commercial?
I think Glenn might have. I spent a lot of time with Glenn.
Oh, okay.
In the beginning of my riding.
The only on the part wall. That's actually me Glenn is when I'm this. On the rail and I'm crashing. They had someone pose as me, and this is like all...
The quality is fake.
Like, that's not me. Like, that's some random dude. No shit. I wasn't even wearing a helmet in the clip. Like this is just some random dude.
Just put a flannel on. That's the only similar thing.
Yeah. And then now it's me.
God.
And now it's not me again when they film back up. That's some random dude.
I honestly, I might have seen that on cable.
Maybe, yeah. It played a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, 20 grand.
Is that rail right by Woodward?
I always looked for that rail. No, so that rail is at a church. Like, so this is where the story gets more interesting.
There's more layers.
Oh, cool. My stupid question leads to interest.
So that's where it was at some, like, Catholic school or Catholic church or something, and someone from the church saw it and actually tried to sue for like us this being I don't
so
know
they tried to sue. They tried to sue Slim Jim, yeah, and then it was like Slim Jim was like, we didn't film that.
Yeah,
he'll go over to Marco. Yeah, and Marco was like, I didn't film that. Goes to Glenn. And Glenn gets the heat for a little bit, and I don't know where the fuck it goes.
I think it all blew over. Yeah, I think we were like a little nervous for a second, but it all blew over.
Yeah. 20 grand, bloody buttholes, and a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good commercial.
I didn't expect any of those scenarios when I...
And I think back then too, like superimposing somebody else's head on somebody was like, they can do that, you know, like whenever
that is just like, yeah, didn't have your face involved.
Yeah, yeah,
no,
like
that's definitely weird. Good,
like that's nice they did that. They probably would have to pay way more. TV. They probably did that for the actor got less than you did.
Probably not. Yeah. Speaking roles, I think that's, well, I wanted to, I mean, it kind of circles
what do you
back
want to talk about, Van?
Yeah, what do you want to talk about, Van? Well, not about what we want to talk
his
about
list of emailed questions to himself
talk about.
Wow, are you clowning on me?
No.
Guys put me on the spot here. Yeah, no, I don't know. I think we covered it. I mean, I think I'm just excited about the next chapter here. I'm excited on what I'm doing for Source, and I'm excited to go to Paris. And
who are the gatekeepers of BMX?
All that comes to the gatekeepers?
Oh, no. It's a fucking Modelo.
The more you get into BMX... Like, I can't believe, like, the people I know and stuff. And Colin Varniak said a lot in his podcast. It's pretty funny who you see, like, you know, BMX is, like, a very open canvas. Like, it can be ran in a lot of cool directions because, like, the generation that was running it has all kind of stepped away. Yeah. You know, and that's, like, what Colin's seeing. He's like, there's people still, like, like, older heads still in there, which is great. But there's a lot of people that have, like... cool opportunities to do a lot of cool things right now, like Van being getting this Source job and you doing the Olympics. Like it's a great time for these people from like your generation to kind of step up and have some really cool opportunities to fill some shoes.
That I have a question based off of that. What is your advice for people that love BMX, that not necessarily pro riders, but you know, included obviously, that want to have a career in it? And what can they do to work towards doing something, anything within BMX?
Yeah, I think it's just passion, really, truly. I mean, I don't think, like, honestly, if you don't love BMX, there's easier ways to make a living. So I think people are going to find their niche if BMX is what they love to do. Like, I feel like I was lucky enough to have the talent to ride professionally, but... I really think if I hadn't been, I was so passionate about BMX that I would have been a photographer or a product designer or something. I don't know what direction I would have went in, but I knew I wanted to be part of that like lifestyle and that culture. So I think if that's the direction you want to go, then just be involved. And
pretty much what Moeller said, like if you love your industry, it's easy. you know, because you love it. So you're going to find something to do with it or be successful in something in your industry if you just really, truly love it.
Yeah, and I think just be involved. I mean, I think even opportunities in the latter part of my career are by being involved. Like, just go be active in your industry, in your sport, you know, whatever it is, just go to events, hang out with people, ride your bike, you know, and maybe that grows. I think, like, you know, getting some of those opportunities that I had, but like never saying no, or just putting on your own events or your own jams or whatever it is, like just be active,
be present.
Do something, yeah. Just show up.
I mean, you said earlier, it's like you have an opportunity to say yes, and that is that is something that I've always subscribed to. Is like don't
a good opportunity.
Well, I mean, you have no fucking idea until you're through it. You know, like sometimes I'm like, yeah,
sometimes
I'd
you
never
can,
do
you
that
can
again.
Make some a common sense choice and be like, this isn't really.
I wouldn't say,
but that even but here, so I'll use an example just before you. So even if you're in a shitty opportunity, there could be someone around you that is like, yeah, this fucking sucks right now. But if you put your best foot forward and you do your best and you keep a good attitude during that shitty opportunity, somebody's over there going like, damn, he's fucking not being an asshole when he should be right now. And then they have an opportunity down the road and they're like, yeah, that guy was good.
That's true. This brings up two points.
True.
This brings up 2 points. There's definitely stuff that like has happened over the years where I've talked to people and like, you know, even something as simple as a sponsorship opportunity, like where someone brings up a name and all it takes is for someone to go, and you're on to the next one.
Exactly.
You don't even have to say anything bad, but that person just, they're not an oversounding, like, yes.
It's there's something missing in their resume that the other people have covered.
He bitched about the fucking lunch one too many times.
So right there, that can hurt you. And two, I think there is challenging decisions sometimes, like, that I still don't know, like, what, like, so some of the stuff that I did for the UCI, like in the beginning, like some of the consulting things, like I was debating like if I wanted to do those opportunities, because it was kind of like I felt like we were kind of giving away our years of knowledge and experience in a sense for like and we weren't really getting much in return for it, you know. And it was like, am I okay with this? You know, but then I think we made the events better. And then I ended up in Tokyo for 3 years because of that. Like, I would have never, like, there was one critical meeting that I was like debating. Like, I was at a really pivotal, I was like struggling financially. I made a conscious decision where like, I'm not doing events or like doing stuff if I'm not getting paid anymore. I can't, I have to value myself and have like a rate, and like I can't just do this stuff, you know. And I really made a conscious decision to do that, and then this one opportunity came to go there and kind of consult over some stuff, but we weren't getting paid, we were just getting sent there. And then, you know, that meant we could do the judging gigs, which we did get paid for and things like that. So it was like, but I was like, man, I don't know.
Yeah, but
and then
kind of like breaking even by the end, or it's like you break down the money you're getting paid for a week of your life. It's
yeah. Really. But long story short, I debated that. I wasn't sure. I had like an internal conflict if I wanted to like offer my services for what the little I was getting in return. But ultimately, I got a lot in return. Mm-hmm. You know, so those types of decisions can be hard, because like sometimes what you're looking at in front of you doesn't make sense. But then there's something big. But sometimes that is going to be the end stop. But sometimes it's going to go further. Yeah, yeah. And I think that was what I was talking about earlier, where I kept trying to like do those things because one of those things was going to go further.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know.
It's very true.
No, but you're right.
A few good opportunities. This is where my point comes. Like, if you have a few opportunities.
Oh, Dennis was just.
No, no, not. It doesn't have to be good. But what if you had like a few and you said yes to all of them and you did all of them like 75%, you know? That's where I was coming
from. Oh, yeah,
from.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No, that's.
Like, you, there is times in lots of people's lives where they might have a few little opportunities to change their life and they have to pick one.
No, you're 100%.
So you
no,
do 100%. Have to sometimes like.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right.
That's what I was just saying. Because I have a few friends, you know, like they might not, they're not all great opportunities, but you know, I see that happening with people in their 30s where they have to pick one of the.
Yeah. Anybody that's going.
Fair.
Anybody
that's. Say yes to everything.
I guess it's what junction you're at in your life too. Like when I was at a junction where I was trying to create something, then I guess I was trying to say more yes to more things because I was hoping that one of those things led to something bigger.
Yeah.
But I guess once you have, like, now I have some good opportunities with Source and with the Olympics and things.
You can be a little more choosy.
So it's easier
now
to say no to something so you can focus on the other.
Yeah, there's that aspect when you start to, you're going to have a few good opportunities, or like when you're at a crossroads in your life, and you know.
Yeah,
you
can't say, I mean, yes, my advice,
but do some shit out of your comfort zone. I like that. It's like, I think kind of the
my advice the in that situation is that if you realize you can't put all your effort into it, then don't bother. You know,
that's like where
if you can only put it in a couple of areas, focus on those areas and figure out which ones are more.
Yeah, because you could do this really cool thing that's out of your comfort zone, and like you're saying, like it makes you look badass. But if you're doing a few things real shitty, it might make you look like everyone's looking at you like you're not really that good at anything because you're just worn out.
The old dad saying, "Where if it's worth doing, it's worth trying," or something like that. Like, if it's worth doing, then it's worth putting your all into it, or something like that. That's true.
If it's worth doing, then it is worth putting your all into it. But you can't do. To put your all into too much, or you won't be putting your all into it.
Leap. Then you're making shitty podcast edits. So,
what?
I don't know. That's me. I was just me just being Modelo'd out.
He's had two Modelo's.
I've had three.
Oh, he's up to three.
And I don't drink, dude. Yeah,
you're pretty skinny dude, too.
So. I'm skinny.
Yeah.
I'm skinny. What else we got? Little Devil.
I like nighttime drinking podcasts.
Yeah.
They're my favorite.
Scariest thing you ever done.
Scariest thing I've
ever... On or off the bike? Off the bike and on the bike. Two.
You got two questions on this one. Nice.
I guess I'll go on the bike first. Maybe that whip over the rail Dennis was talking about earlier is probably up there with one of the scarier things. I mean, or maybe the manual gap to rail... Criminal banger, like both Criminal Mischief and Stay Fit bangers, maybe are up there.
The Criminal Mischief one is just mind boggling to me because that raw footage makes it just seem like it's fucking Tuesday.
It was just
Tuesday. 1 p.m.
It was just a Tuesday.
1 p.m. Like, oh fuck, let me eat this sandwich and then I'll go do this.
It kind of is not far off from that because actually, what happened was
literally one of the more legendary clip, top 20 clips of all time that has yet to be duplicated. Nobody has ever duplicated that clip. And the raw footage that has been posted literally looks like, oh, okay, you're going to do this? Oh, okay. Oh, you're going to take a couple run-ups? Okay, I'll film.
Because he was just doing crazy shit every day.
Okay.
Like, so it was just like, all right, another crazy van thing. Like, no one knows like how crazy it is until 20 years later when we're still talking about it.
What happened was on that day, like, I was actually going to, this is when I still thought I was going to go to college, and I was going to like a community college near where I was living, and Garrett Burns was like meeting me at my house, so we were gonna go ride after I got done class, and that thing was like right around the corner from my house, and I'd like been looking at it, and I remember Derek Adams even telling me, he was like, man, he's like, after I did it he was like surprised, because you know I would look at a lot of things and talk about a lot of things, but he said man, I didn't think this one was actually happening, I thought you were full of shit with this one. But like, I was driving home from class, and for whatever reason I just got it in my head that like this is now, like I'm doing this when I get back, and my like hands started sweating like driving back, and I just walked into the door. I was like, yo Garrett, grab the camera, like I got something I want to do. And then like, it's crazy thinking back on that too, because it's like fully just bro cam footage. Like we, like that's just Garrett doesn't know how to film. Like we didn't, like we just like, you would hand the camera to anyone and do the craziest shit you ever did in your life. Like, it's like insane. Like, you know, like I would never, like as I got older, I would never ever do that. But like back then we just didn't even think about it. It just like, didn't matter who, someone's filming it. Like,
it's almost like, the way though, because when you're pumped, man, that's
yeah, that
time,
moment,
that day that you feel great and you're feeling it, you know, cause when you plan stuff out for so long, like you get there that day with that sick filmer and you're like, it's not the fucking day, but I gotta do it. Like,
yeah. I mean, how do you even think of that? Honestly, how do you think of just like, oh, it's not a good setup? Like, I feel like, oh, it'd be sick if there was like a better runway. 99.9%.
Yeah, I don't know. It just made sense to me. And maybe that's why it worked. Maybe because it was close to my house, and because I like, oh, there's a gap to rail, but oh, there's a curb in the way. Like, so I don't even remember now, but I'm just thinking my brain just adapted. Well, then you have to manual it then, you know, like, I don't know.
We should put out a challenge. Like you said, that kind of clip hasn't been duplicated,
yeah,
even close, and especially not on a Savage spot. I mean, like that, like if anyone could do that, you know what
I thought,
like,
would be good. Okay, here's a crazy idea. Okay, like I'm gonna like about to pitch a crazy idea. I would just like to see someone do this in general, like, and if someone wants to do it for my Corona Mischief part, let it rip. But I would love to see a tribute parts.
I've thought about this.
So you have before. Riders. They can either go to the and like this is where you're like encouraging a one up.
Yeah.
So you can like either go to the same spot and like one up it, or you can like just find a similar spot and do a similar trick. Like it doesn't have to be the same spot.
Try and make a same part,
like, but not the same rider. Have it be like every clip is a different rider.
Oh,
so it's like you would.
This gets in. So like that's a too much.
Or maybe not.
How many riders we got?
Maybe not every clip.
Like but a like, crew like that. Can but think be about that
it, if you pick like if you pick just any video part that's you know iconic, and you just like. Get a crew of guys, however many guys. I mean, what you could pick 30 guys. I mean, how many clips does a video part have? 40, 50 clips
30 to 40,
for a long 40, one?
50 different talented riders all trying. That's a lot of fucking.
Yeah, but everybody's got their own specialties.
I mean, you organize the whole Olympics, so.
But everybody's you're looking got their at own this stuff
like, this is easy.
I'm not saying
to me, I'm like, this,
all right, where do we put the judging tower?
I've just thought this would be like a
that's cool, an amazing idea.
A cool thing to see.
I think it's more realistic if like one rider kind of like always idolized this guy and he got really good and he can go like try and replicate that part.
I don't know, man. I like the idea of it being different, right?
Dude,
I mean,
who the fuck knows 45 talented riders that could like get clips from your Criminal Mischief part?
Are you telling me that 40 guys can't film the part I filmed as
one
guy?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that's why you are who you are. I really don't even know if that's possible.
So you take
I don't think we can coordinate that. I don't think we can coordinate that, even though you coordinate all the stuff you do.
It's going to take 40 guys, and they still can't do what I did 20 years
ago. You're going to have to line it up and find these riders, and like, because I could never do that. I really be like, I don't think the talent field goes that deep.
It easily does.
I think that the idea of recreating a video part, and there was like a, I can't remember. We had somebody that was like the perfect example of this, where it wasn't necessarily like setups that you needed to find, you know, because like a setup is, most of your Criminal Mischief part is like kind of hard to, you know, the pull over, you know, ride on a ledge, pull over to the rail, you know, like you need to find that setup, but like finding,
yeah, it'd be hard.
Yeah. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like
LA dude that was like within the last 5 years or something, all the spots are still there.
Yeah.
A lot of them are still there, but a lot of them
are they?
Gotta buy a ticket to the East Coast every other month and look for these spots. Like, dude, this is a hard fucking challenge.
But I'm not saying it was easy. I'm just saying it would be cool.
Fuck, I could post it. I'll post a clip tomorrow with the. I'll post a clip. The criminal mischief banger with this clip, and then say and just do the trick challenge, the Instagram trick challenge, like literally manual bonk to gap to rail.
I don't want to encourage.
I think qualifying for the Olympics would be easier than replicating
that. They want to do it.
I'm not encouraging this.
Yeah, of course they want to do it. Why the fuck else would you want to do it for $100?
Don't send it for Ryan Fudger's $100.
You're not paying.
It's worth it. I'll throw in 50.
There you go, 150.
I only want people to do it because they want to do it.
I think it's
for $150 you want to do it.
For literally the trick challenge thing is always funny because it's like it's supposed to be, people talk about the money like, oh fuck, it should be $1,000. Yeah, it should be, but I have 100, and it's just bringing up the conversation and letting people appreciate how this trick is really hard. People that was done a long time ago,
and money helps the motivation.
Yeah. I mean, the Tosh Gap got redone.
Which Tosh
one?
Gap,
the one at Rays.
Oh yeah.
Like that's that. Cool. Like shit like that is like, it's cool because everybody like appreciated how fucking crazy it is and everybody talked about it.
Yeah.
And then a dude finally got it done. Like that's what it's all about. Like the Alex did one, and then the Nyquist one was obviously the best one. Nyquist? The fucking half bar to tooth to half bar out.
Oh yeah.
Amazing. That was amazing. So, and I actually probably owe him more money because that YouTube video did really well. Yeah. So I owe him more money.
Was where his son was like working on half bars. I think like me, Matias, and someone else. I think it was like $350 when he landed his first bar spin before like January.
Uh-huh.
And he did it. We all just send him the Venmo.
So fuck yeah.
Gave someone like $300 for doing.
Hell yeah. Spin. But he's born like into that.
Already winning money off.
Hell yeah. What else we got on this list? Being a pro now versus back in the day, easier or harder? Obviously, this is coming off a very poignant conversation with Mueller about that. I don't know. You said you didn't get all the way through the podcast. Yeah. So just drop today for everybody.
That's a good question. And I don't know. I guess it depends on who you are.
Mm-hmm.
To me, like being a pro in modern day seems a little bit more complicated, but there's also like a lot of pros and cons. I do like the fact that there's a lot more outlets to produce media, but I also dislike the fact that there seems to be a lower level of appreciation for things. Like everything's just so disposable now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good and bad. There's a place for everything, but content feels disposable. It just feels like you couldn't even do a Criminal Mischief now. Like no matter how good of a part you put out, no matter how progressive it was,
yeah,
it's not going to have the impact. Not because what I did was that much more impactful than what writers are doing today, but because media is just different.
Yeah,
you know. So it's just harder to have that, to pack that punch, and everything's so watered down that it's harder for pros to be. To matter as much, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. I mean, literally the other guy walking in that had, you know, the right here has whatever, 2 million views on YouTube. And it's like, but as soon as you get done watching that, you go and watch another video, you know, right, like right. It wasn't like Seek and Destroy was like on.
Yeah. You just wear those VHS like tapes
2 months because it was the best video you had for until you got the next video that took a while. Sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, you're lucky if like, a few videos a year came out, yeah. you know, like yeah. it's like you had props and you maybe got a few videos a year. So, I mean, that stuff was just watched on repeat. So again, I think it's, again, I'm repeating myself, but I think it's good because now there's a place for everything, but the quality content is watered down and doesn't have that staying power that yeah. it used to. Yeah. So
I feel like, my fear, or the question was, is it harder to be a pro back in the day or now? So
I think it just depends on who you are.
That's literally the first thing he said. That's yeah. funny. That's funny that you said that. But
I think it might have been easier yeah. for some sort of pros back then, and I think it's easier now for some sort of pros yeah. now. Like
I think it's harder for people to appreciate just really good bike riding. You know, like I feel like really good bike riding.
Really good bike riders are fucking appreciated.
I don't know, dude.
Felix, Lewis, those dudes who are just really good. It's undeniable, and all they got to do is be really good because that's how good they are. Those are
good examples, but like Reiki's. Reiki's
Johnny's really good.
He's fucking amazing. Yeah, but think about it.
He's blowing up. Dude, this last like 6 months. Watch.
He has been blowing up, but he's
been guys who are really good
for like 3 years.
No, but now it's like it's different. It's happening yeah. right now.
It is interesting though, right now. Like, and I don't think this is a new problem,
yeah.
but I do think it's interesting because like I used to say like way back in the day, it doesn't matter how good you are, someone has to care. And for some reason, there's certain riders that like just can't break through that like that one barrier. And like yeah. maybe Johnny's one of them, maybe he's not.
Nah, but, he's
like,
coming.
But we have good examples. He's here. From Jersey, like Jeff Slatterly is a perfect example of that. He made it. I mean, he was the man.
Yeah.
And like he did okay for a little bit, but he never broke that like that next level he needed yeah. to be like a legitimate pro with a legitimate salary. For sure. Randy Brown. Like yeah. never
down here, it's like, you know, like Mike Gray's kind of been one of those yeah. guys, and Connor yeah. Lodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lotus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets mad because I messed his last name yeah. up, and I've known him for 15
That's
years.
That's rude.
Connor Lotus. Very but there's rude. Like those dudes who are like, damn, like they just didn't like break through to that yeah. nice shoe sponsor, energy, like that yeah. next level.
It's
Jeff,
like
Jeff
nice.
Was one of those guys.
Yeah, Jeff
as
was
soon
totally
as Market Zero was over, and like I think United might have been ending, he was like, I can't, you know?
It's, yeah.
That's it.
Like, well, and that's what it's maybe it's just a harsh reality of our industry or any sport in general. Like
especially our little sport, I think.
It's like yeah.
Yeah. I yeah, think there's parallels
a niche-y,
between
very
anything,
core sport,
but like
football and all that stuff. There's all these people yeah. that made a shitload of, you know, they made money or they just barely graced it and touched it, and then that was it. But yeah. it's obviously on a bigger level.
I was gonna say football.
But,
you do 1 year,
but
the, and you're like,
but there's stories of those money. Dudes being homeless on the street too. You mm-hmm. know, like
yeah.
it's all the same. You know, there's
yeah,
but
just
I don't know
how fast you spend that money.
Yeah. So, okay, hard question. What else?
That's a good question. I think football is way different, though.
that may have been wrong. That may have been wrong. Hold on, where's my beer? I need to take another drink for saying something dumb. Go Birds.
It's just that's like that.
Oh yeah, Eagles. Yeah, right.
Did Eagles. Wait. What the hell was just going on in normal people sports? Oh,
soccer.
Philadelphia and San Padres. You guys beat us right after I left Philadelphia.
Yeah, the guy hit the ball. Padres
got and my friends were like, they're going to win. I was like, dude, I was just in Philadelphia. I'm like, I'm at the at the spot. It's getting dark. And like the chorus street riders are there. Like chocolate truck dudes are like, first pitch is at 7:30. And that's why I was like, hey, that team's going to beat us because like they fuck with their like no core BMX riders are saying like Padres first pitch at 7:30. I'm like, they're behind that team. Like
Philly's a passionate sports
That's why
town.
I said, I was like, there's no way we're beating that team. Like everyone in that city is like at that game getting down, like rooting for them. Anyways,
what's like the heyday for you? Is it the Criminal Mischief days? Is it the Fit days? Is it like the salad? You know, like everybody has their salad days where it was like even just like going out with the boys and you guys felt like every session was just like fucking awesome. Like,
yeah, it's right now.
Yeah.
Right now. No, I think.
I wish. That'd be sick.
No, I don't know about. I really did enjoy like the Holy Fit era. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed even after that, like I think my early to mid 30s in general, I really enjoyed because I was really comfortable with myself, both as a person and a rider.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still kind of living that pro life and that pro freedom. And so I think it was just a really good, really good era for me because I just had a lot of fun because I was comfortable with myself as a human. I was comfortable with myself as a rider, and I was just really enjoying it. I was just really enjoying it. So I think my early mid 30s were a really good time.
That's cool. That's cool because you'd expect it to be that. Those Criminal Mischief days, you know. So
no, I think there was more pressure then. You know, like as much as you might not think so, I think I like. You know, I felt like I had something to prove and I felt like I was like hard on myself, like, you know, to ride at a certain level or to produce certain clips or content. And, you know, it was like even like we were just watching that Kona Gap. I remember I almost didn't go on that Road Full 7 because I was so burnt out. I just got back from a trip to Australia when we were filming for Criminal Mischief, and then I like had a really bad hipper and my body was just destroyed. And like, you know, I remember calling Marco and telling him I wasn't going on that trip, and he like talked me into going on Road Full 7. And
you were the star. I mean, you were effectively the star of those,
you know,
because there was the joke like, oh, Van Homan, my 26th Road Fools. Like,
it's really funny to think too, because I remember one of the reasons too that I didn't, considering how media is nowadays, one of the reasons I didn't want to go on the trip, aside from the fact that I was burnt out and my body was beat up, was that like I was just on the last three Road Fools. People are sick of seeing me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm like, I need to take a break. Someone else should go on this trip because, like, you know, I felt like I was on like 4, 5, and 6. So I was like, oh, it's time to give someone else a turn, you know, like, and I felt like people were going to get annoyed with seeing me.
Yeah.
And that's like hilarious to think now because you have this video that like, what, those videos came out over the course of probably at least 2 years, if not three.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, now it's like literally like post something every day.
Yeah,
you know, and I was like, oh, they just saw me 6 months ago. Like,
yeah. There's literally people seeing what other people had for breakfast every single day. Like, stuff like that now.
Yeah.
You know, your kit is out of control right now. It's like members only, the glasses.
Kit?
And just, you're really throwing me.
What's members only?
I mean, it just kind of looks like it's a Vans jacket, I know.
It's a fucking windbreaker. And I can finally see clear. I'm loving it. I'm like, damn, dude. I've really never seen any of these pictures, like, clear. This is so... Swear to God, I'm like, this is amazing.
You ever seen the Vic table?
No, I've looked at it, like, 10 times. I'm like, dude, that is so clear looking now.
I feel like people definitely aren't listening to us anymore.
No, yeah. Who cares?
I feel like people definitely
aren't listening. There's going to be comments. Please, no more Modelo. There'll be a couple. No more Modelo.
Have you made it this far?
Yeah.
What is members only?
Like a members only jacket?
Yeah, you know.
Kind of like a smoker's jacket, like a stylish, like...
It's stylish. It is stylish. Yeah, it is just, yeah. I'm just saying it's your kit. It's like a...
It's a windbreaker, but yeah. Members only.
Yeah. Members only. Is there anything else? I feel like if we're having Van on the podcast...
I feel like we're done, and then like something else like sparks, and then it leads to a story.
Yeah. Tell us a story, Van.
That's not how this works.
I do have to pee.
There's that honey jack out there.
I have more beer. So,
all right, should we wrap this up? What are we doing? All right,
we're still going.
I mean, do you
ever do intermissions?
Yeah.
Can we do an intermission?
Yeah.
Let's pause.
Yeah.
Okay, we went outside.
Took a little pause.
I turned off the light on accident, which is connected to the sound recorder, and I hit the microphone, and then we went outside, and now the podcast is over.
We're done?
I think so.
Dennis? All right.
I loved it. That was great.
Yeah.
Great Monday night or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Tuesday night.
Yeah. I don't know about Modelo's and me.
Yeah.
You did great. All right. I'll bring tequila next time.
Yeah. Right. Oh my God. I'd die. If there is time before the end of your trip, I would love to just sit down and what we could watch a video of my choice and a video of your choice. We could watch like Trailblazing. We watch something else.
Okay,
something random. If you're free,
like cool. Another unclicked kind of,
yeah, just like a video vault thing, like the thing we were gonna do with Mike, but it didn't work out. Like it'd be cool to do something like that. Keep it under an hour.
Sounds great.
Something cool.
I'll come just back like over a, for that.
Yeah. So something mellow.
Cool.
But if there is time,
yeah, so, let me know. But, I'm into it. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Hopefully, everyone out there in listening land. Hopefully, I had something interesting to say to you, and hopefully, you enjoyed our podcast here on rbmx.com.
You're supposed to do the like and subscribe thing.
Oh, like and subscribe.
Yeah, no, better.
All right, I'd like to thank everyone out there in listening land for being here at rbmx.com. Make sure to hit that like and subscribe button, and we'll see you next time here with Ryan Fudger and Dennis Anderson.
Yeah.
Until next time.
I'm dying.
Thank you, man. You're the man.
There you go. That was the enthusiasm.
Literally the man, the myth, the legend right here.
No better.